Our next speaker is the director of the Wildlife Conservation Society's Africa program, James Deutsch. James directs a program that involves about 800 people around Africa and in New York, and a budget of approximately $15 million a year. I'll be talking to you about that after the meeting. He's got a fascinating background, really. He's a biologist by training, an ecologist. He studied the Ugandan cob, which is an antelope. He studied cichlids, a type of fish in Malawi. He's lectured at Imperial College in London. You'll notice he has a slight accent, as well as the University of East Anglia. He's also, before he came to WCS, from 1997 to 2002, he worked running the United Kingdom's national fundraising charity for HIV and AIDS, Crusade. And I'm very pleased that James is joining us today to give his perspective on Ebola issues. Thank you, James.
Thanks. Can people hear me in the back? Yep. Would people like to stand up and just stretch for 5 seconds? It's a long afternoon. You can always spot the people who've been college professors somewhere along the way, right? Because they... All right, that's enough. Like many of the previous speakers, or several of the previous speakers, I'm incredibly honored to have been invited to come and speak here because I'm nowhere near as much of an expert on any of these issues as many of my predecessors, and it's really an honor to share the podium with them. I've been asked by Billy and Bob to share with you a conservationist's perspective on the issues that you've just been hearing about. The last two talks concentrated very much on looking at things from a human perspective, and there's no question that a human perspective has to be the most important perspective for all of us, and especially for those of us involved in economic development and medical care. But some of us care about conservation as well, and so I'm going to shift perspectives a little bit and look at things more from the conservation perspective. In particular, I'd like to ask whether or not there's any way that we could currently be intervening in order to slow down or stop the spread of Ebola in apes. Most of the previous speakers have been talking about ways in which we might address the Ebola epidemic in humans and things we could do with respect to apes in order to address the epidemic in humans. But they haven't actually talked about whether there's anything we could do to address the epidemic in apes themselves. And as I'll be saying, you'll see, the epidemic in apes is itself a serious problem. I've divided the talk into four brief parts. First, I'd just like to share with you where I'm coming from. That is what the priorities are of the program, which I try to run. Then I'd like to talk a little bit about the relationship between Ebola and the decline of apes in Central Africa. Then I'd like to suggest to you four possible interventions that haven't come from me. Other people have suggested them to me. And finally, I'd like to discuss what might be issues around whether or not any of those four interventions would be likely to have any impact. As Steve mentioned, I won't say I run the Africa program because WCS isn't that kind of organization, but I attempt to drive it along, and we currently work doing field conservation in 17 countries in Africa. We do have a total budget this year of about $16 million, but most of that is restricted funds. We have about $4 million of unrestricted money to move around, which a little bit of which we could steal for this if we could think of something good to do with it, and if I could persuade all my partners in the organization to let me put it there. We have about 900 staff on the ground in Africa, which makes us probably the largest field conservation group in Africa. And our emphasis is really in three areas. The first is on helping governments and local communities to manage national parks and mixed-use landscapes sustainably over the long term. The second is building capacity, that is training Africans to take over the job of conserving their own resources for the future. And finally, true to WCS's origins, we still do quite a bit of applied research. That is, when conservationists need answers to questions, we go out and collect the data in order to give them the answers they need for them to do their jobs. of these areas really concentrate, there are two purposes behind these three types of activities. The first is to preserve a group of sample intact wild or semi-wild ecosystems or landscapes across Africa. And for example, in Gabon and the Republic of Congo, we have a number of sites where we've been working for some time where we're deeply committed to staying on the ground over the long term and trying to hold intact representatives of these ecosystems, including, for example, Ovindo National Park, Lope National Park, and Loango National Park in Gabon, Nobale Ndoki, Odzala, and Konkwati National Parks in the Republic of Congo, and many more. The second of our two overall goals or priorities is to prevent the extinction in the wild of a particular group of chosen, usually charismatic and ecologically important species. And among our very top priorities species are included all four subspecies of gorillas, as well as common chimpanzees. And so you can see immediately why today's topic is of such great interest to all of us in WCS. Here's where we work in Africa. The dark green countries are those where we have a major country program. The light green countries are those in which we have one or more project, but not a major program. But our two largest country programs in the entire continent are in Gabon and in the Republic of Congo. To move on to the second part of the talk, a number of authors have documented, and perhaps most graphically, Peter Walsh and his colleagues, many of whom from WCS, in a paper in Nature in 2003, have documented rapid decline of ape populations across Western Central Africa. Western Central Africa, by the way, this area, including most of the Western Congo Basin, Gabon, Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Cameroon, these are the areas which contain the largest remaining populations of apes anywhere in the world. But over the last 10 or 20 years, these populations have declined very rapidly. And these data from Peter's paper just show the decline in the average number of ape nests encountered along transect lines in different places in Gabon between 1980 and during the 1980s on the left and over the last few years on the right. And what you can see is you can see a big gap in the middle where there really aren't a lot of apes left, as well as up here where there aren't a lot of apes left and maybe down here a bit. There still are ape populations here and here. And Peter did a variety of multiple regressions on this and argued very strongly that the number one cause of this decline is the issue that that Billy so graphically illustrated, which is the bushmeat trade, the unsustainable bushmeat trade. But a secondary cause seems to be Ebola. So Ebola is not only an extraordinarily devastating threat to human beings in this region, but it is actually a cause of a huge, drastic decline in ape populations, which threatens the largest populations of apes in the world. And in particular, these areas here and these areas here have very, very low human population densities and are expected not to have high levels of bushmeat consumption compared to the areas near cities. And so some of that decline seems almost certainly to have resulted from Ebola. That maps very closely with recent human outbreaks of Ebola. The black boxes here, which you see here and here, represent human outbreaks of Ebola. And the expectation is that, as previous speakers have explained, that usually what happens is people catch Ebola from apes, monkeys, or in some cases, duikers, which they find dead in the forest or they kill when the animals are ill, and then they take them home and eat them. What makes this so frightening to a conservationist is that these are some of the last wild places in all of Africa. Minkebi National Park, site of an excellent WWF conservation project, Nobale Ndoki National Park, which abuts two other national parks in Central African Republic and Cameroon, and Odzala National Park. Both of these are parks which WCS helps to manage together with a with the government of the Republic of Congo. And there are a number of newer parts in Gabon which aren't on this map. So these areas are extraordinarily threatened by this epidemic to apes. Here in a presentation which I've just borrowed from PowerPoint, and I hope he doesn't mind, from Eric Leroy, is a very similar representation to one that a previous speaker showed of Ebola outbreaks in this area, and a general, this is the border between between Gabon on the left and the Republic of Congo on the right, and there's a general, seems to be a general movement of Ebola down and to the right across the landscape. Okay, well, today's question, or the question that I'd like to introduce now, as the speaker who's looking at things from a conservation perspective as opposed to a human health perspective, is should we be doing anything right now to attempt to slow the spread of Ebola in apes? Not only in order to safeguard human well-being, but also in order to safeguard these last populations of great apes in the world. I'm not going to talk about research priorities, partly because I'm not qualified to, and you might well want to ask others about research priorities in the panel discussion, although clearly research priorities are going to be vital for any future solution to this. Moreover, I'm not going to provide you with answers because I have much less expertise, so really what I'm going to do instead is to pose questions to my fellow panelists for them to answer in the discussion section. Because my perspective is really one of a conservation manager and a funder and a fundraiser, not of someone out there who has great expertise. So I'm going to raise questions, really, not answer them. Well, people have suggested to me four possible interventions to attempt to slow down the spread of Ebola in great apes across Central Africa. I may well have missed some, and again, I would welcome any further discussion or further ideas. But people have suggested community education programs of the sort that Billy described, such as the Theater for Africa initiative and the effort to show people the dangers of eating apes. They've suggested increased monitoring of either live ape populations and or of ape die-offs across Western Central Africa. They've suggested the possibility of using rivers as natural barriers to the spread of Ebola and reinforcing those natural barriers by removing natural bridges across rivers. I'm told, I don't know this from experience, that animals cross rivers often on trees which fall across them or other brush that gets in the way, and that it might be possible to send teams of people in canoes with chainsaws to clear away the brush and the fallen trees from rivers so that they form more effective barriers to the movement of terrestrial vertebrates. And fourth, there's the possibility of vaccinating apes themselves from Ebola. So let's look at each of these and ask ourselves whether, from my point of view of a sort of educated layman, can we make any sense of whether any of these are likely to have any effect, and whether we should really be dropping everything else we're doing, and if we're worried about the future of great apes in Central Africa, trying to do some of these things with greater vigor. Well, first of all, community education. To me, this is an obvious and huge opportunity. As Steve mentioned, my previous work was in public health, and this seems to be a remarkable area in which there's a natural synergy between an issue in public health and an issue in conservation. Because clearly it's very bad for great apes that people are eating them, and it's rather bad for people that they're eating them too. So there seems to be almost no question that this is an initiative worth trying to find some more money for. But it's probably not an initiative that's going to have any effect on the rate of Ebola spread in great apes. What it could do is to help protect public health by stopping people from eating apes. And if that worked and it reduced bushmeat consumption, then that could result in larger ape populations, and that might buffer against the impact of Ebola indirectly, conceivably. I should put in that that there's also a controversy going on, which again I'm not qualified to give a verdict on. But Peter Walsh has argued that if you look at where Ebola has spread most widely in ape populations, it tends to be in areas where there's actually a low hunting presence. And he's argued that that might be because Ebola spreads more rapidly through dense populations of apes, and that in places where there's a lot of hunting, the population of apes has been weeded out, and there's less spread of Ebola through the ape populations, a reverse density dependence. I don't know if that's true or not, and again, I would welcome my fellow panelists, who are much more expert than I, to comment on that. Well, what about the second possible intervention is just increasing our monitoring of either live apes or of apes die-off across the region. Obviously, this is something that we're already doing. It's something that we've applied and received some U.S. government funding to do as part of the Congo Basin Forest Partnership. It's something that we could go and try to find more money to do more intensively. Well, once again, it's not something that would in itself slow down the rate of spread of Ebola. On the other hand, it might well provide a better early warning system for humans, because as has been pointed out, most human outbreaks have been preceded by die-offs of apes in the region. It might also, by documenting the destruction of ape populations, enable us to gain more public support and money for the conservation of great apes. So it could have some side benefit as well. Perhaps the most controversial proposal put forward by Peter Walsh and Mike Fay and others has been this idea of river clearance. That is that by taking teams of people with chainsaws and removing natural bridges across rivers, we could form barriers to the spread of Ebola in apes across the region. And this is not an easy thing to judge the merit of, and in fact, I really have no idea what to think about this, so I'm just going to put forward my thoughts about what evidence I've seen, and again, welcome the experts to comment. The efficacy of existing rivers in blocking the spread of Ebola is very unclear. The quality of the geographic information doesn't seem very good. The availability of candidate rivers is also relatively unclear, at least to those of us who aren't tremendous experts in the geography of the region. On the other hand, the cost of doing this probably wouldn't be that great. The negative impact of subdividing populations, preventing animal dispersal, well, if one did it for several hundred years, it might be a problem, but it's pretty unlikely that it would be a huge conservation issue in the short run. Overall, the two key issues to whether or not this could have any impact would seem to be the spatiotemporal pattern of Ebola spread, that is looking to see whether rivers are forming barriers and whether those are barriers that could be improved. And perhaps most importantly, and this is what I'm going to spend the next 2 minutes on, the issue of whether most apes catch Ebola from other apes or whether most apes catch Ebola from some other animal, such as the natural reservoir. Now, with apologies to my betters, and in particular to Dr. Lois, the situation seems to be, well, I learned something already today from the point that it's possible that we have an arthropod reservoir magnified by bats. So an interesting, that we can already extend that hypothesis a bit. But there clearly are populations of animals, conceivably plants, but probably animals, in the Congo Basin that have ongoing endemic or epidemic infections of Ebola from which apes are catching the Ebola. And then there are apes which are catching Ebola. And then there are people which are catching the Ebola. And I think this is pretty uncontroversial. It's uncontroversial that the apes, that at least an occasional ape catches Ebola from some other population of animals in the forest that has it. and that in each of the five outbreaks of Ebola in Western in Gabon, Congo, over the last 4 years, groups of people have caught Ebola from a single infected ape, or in one, or perhaps diaper, or perhaps monkey, but usually apes. So this is relative. So these arrows, red arrows, I think are uncontroversial. But the next question then is it the case that each of these five outbreaks happens like this, with a reservoir infecting an ape and the ape infecting a chain of people? Or is it the case that it happens like this, with the reservoir infecting one ape and then apes infecting each other, leading to a chain of related outbreaks across Central Africa with a single epidemic of apes, and then those infecting people? Now, to the extent that I, as an educated layman, can understand it, Leroy's paper in Science in 2003 attempts to answer the question, which of those two hypotheses is correct? But I'm not sure that it actually succeeds in giving us enough evidence to decide between the two. What Leroy, again, to the extent I can understand it from the paper, seems to have done is first to look at the variation in the genetic sequence of Ebola strains between each of the five different human outbreaks. And second, to look at the variation in genetic sequence of Ebola strains within each of the five different human outbreaks. And what he finds, or what they find, is that there is significant, is that each of these chains of people, vertically, has a different strain of Ebola. There's significant genetic variation between each of the five human outbreaks. But that there is very little genetic variation in the Ebola within each of the human outbreaks. And what that means is that this is not what has happened. That excludes the possibility that the people have given Ebola to each other like this. But it doesn't answer the question whether the apes have given Ebola to each other. Because as far as I can tell from the paper, we don't actually look at the genetic variation within and between groups of related apes. We only look at it within and between groups of related people. So to the extent that I can understand the paper, we actually don't answer the question whether most apes catch Ebola from other apes across Central Africa, or whether most apes catch Ebola directly from a reservoir. We also don't answer the question, because nobody knows, whether the reservoir is a terrestrial vertebrate or something that flies. And because of that, I don't think we answer the question whether clearing rivers could slow down the spread of Ebola across Central Africa. It's pretty clear it couldn't stop the spread, because apes catch Ebola from reservoirs at least occasionally. But whether it could slow down the spread depends on this question of how many apes catch Ebola from each other or from a terrestrial vertebrate. I guess that this question might be resolved by looking in much more detail at the spatiotemporal pattern of Ebola spread, though I don't know whether the information is good enough. And I wonder whether some more detailed epidemiological modeling of what's going on could make a difference. There's some suggestions from people at Princeton or whatever that maybe it could, but I don't know. Finally, and I guess my time is just about up, so I'll zip through and finish, there is the issue of vaccination. Several people have mentioned that we now have vaccine candidates that appear to have some efficacy in primates. Most people have looked at the question whether we are going to have an efficacious vaccine for humans soon. But in the meantime, the question is then raised, well, do we have a vaccine we could use on primates? Either we could use a vaccine to form a barrier to Ebola spread in primates, just like the river idea, or perhaps we could use a vaccine to preserve groups of primates in particular areas, such as around forest clearings or bys in national parks. The previous issues I just discussed are relevant to the question whether or not we could form a barrier, but at least this would seem to be worth thinking about. This is my final slide. So what conclusions can I draw? And I really do welcome the wisdom from my betters here. It seems that key ape populations in model ecosystems in Western Central Africa are threatened by Ebola. It seems that education, that community education, and greater ape monitoring would be valuable, but would not directly prevent the spread of Ebola in apes. Whether or not river clearance could make any difference depends on the importance of ape-ape transmission versus reservoir ape transmission, but might be worth trying. And vaccination might conceivably slow the spread of Ebola or preserve sample populations. Well, thank you for your attention.